Showers and thunderstorms likely this evening, a 70% chance with a low of 62. And on Tuesday, a 30% chance of continuing showers throughout the morning, then becoming partly sunny with a high near 71. Currently, it's 74 degrees here on the campus of UL Lafayette. Coming up at 4 o'clock, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. We begin this hour by going into the interview studio with Judith Merriweather.
And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is photographer John Slaughter, here to talk about his book Grand Coteau, which has been published by the UL Lafayette Press. They've released a number of new titles this fall, and his book Grand Coteau is one of them. There are several opportunities that our listeners will have to get the book signed and talk with you about your book, and we'll be telling them more about those. The UL Lafayette Press has two book signings coming up, and there will be a book signing at Barnes & Noble on December 8th. So several opportunities people will have to chat with you about this book. Some of our listeners may have had the pleasure of hearing you a couple weeks ago with Cheryl Castile. You were here with Patrice Melnick, who wrote the preface and introduction and also a number of the historical blurbs in the book. And John, I'm personally so happy that this book has been published and that you're here to talk about it. I went to the Academy of the Sacred Heart and so have a very personal connection with the town and with many of the images that you have in this book. There are thousands of people who have been educated in Grand Coteau through the academy, through the seminary, thousands of people who have come through on retreats, either at the retreat center or through the diocesan retreat center there as well, and just so many people who have had occasion to visit Grand Coteau. But very few people have had the privilege of living there like you have over the past over 35 years now.
Yes, what? Real estate there is a very short supply.
It is a small town, isn't it? About how many people live there?
About 1,000.
About 1,000.
And just the way it's been constrained by the properties that belong to the religious and other large landowners, it's very limited in terms of its space for housing.
Right, and not only the large landowners like the schools, but families who have lived there, Creole families who have lived there for many, many generations. So you're a handful of the privileged few who have been living there. And you've actually had the privilege as well of living in a number of different places in the community.
This is true.
And that has also enhanced your observations that appear in this book. So tell us how you got to Grand Coteau. How did you get there? It wasn't from a retreat. It wasn't from going to school there.
We had been living north of St. Francis, my wife and I, and we decided we need to move from where we were. And she was looking for a job teaching Spanish, and we were in Baton Rouge. And I said, well, we should stop at the CYO Center, Catholic Youth Organization Center, to see if they have something. And we stopped in, and they said, oh, there's an opening at Sacred Heart in Grand Coteau for a Spanish teacher. And I was familiar with the school because of a girl that I dated from Lafayette, and we'd gone there once. And so we drove over, and it was a beautiful place. And when we pulled up to the front of the school, you know, it's got these really nice double doors, and you walk in, and it's this oriental carpet, and it's just the whole place is really sophisticated. And it was like a done deal. I mean, it was like she was offered a job and we moved to Grand Coteau.
That's interesting how you put that. I mean, obviously a beautiful place surrounding it, but that element of sophistication and spirituality that you enter into when you go to that school, the Academy of the Sacred Heart.
Well, I was talking to somebody the other day that they've really done a fabulous job of maintaining the grounds. I think a lot of sacrifice in order to do that. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy thing to maintain a building that's of that age. Parts of it date back to probably around 1821, I think, or maybe later. But it takes a lot of work and effort to keep that in order.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the benefits of living. As I said in an interview with Cheryl, that living around institutions who have a long-term presence, and they think long-term.
Right. And, you know, here in South Louisiana, we don't have that many places. New Orleans does. It's older. But in South Louisiana, it's harder to find those institutions with layers of history. And Grand Coteau really does have that. The book is chronological, so it begins when you and your wife, Hillary, moved to Grand Coteau.
This is true.
Now, you were a photographer before you moved to Grand Coteau. How did you begin taking pictures?
Well, I sort of dabbled in it when I was in school. And when I returned to Louisiana, I was really interested in making films, but it was hard to get film work. Back then, those days, it was always a matter of money, and this wasn't exactly the front line of making films. So I did make a 16-millimeter film, but there just wasn't that much work. So I continued to shoot stills, and I'd taken one particular photo that was very popular in the St. Francisville area. And when we moved over here, it was just a really fertile area. I mean, especially Grand Coteau is a very, very fertile visual town. And I think there's very few towns in the state like it. I mean, it's unusually, there's like Washington, which is nice. There's two in the St. Louis Parish, Washington and Grand Coteau, and then there's St. Francisville, and really like Natchitoches is really not a small town, but it has a lot of the same kind of feel. And, you know, there's just not that many older, smaller towns. And the big towns a lot of times tend to destroy their historical areas. They get lost, you know. Mm-hmm. New Orleans being excluded from that. They've done a pretty good job there.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about your personal, again, so many of these people that I mentioned, whether they went to school there, on retreat there, or passed through, they've had that moment like you did when you, I guess, dated a girl who'd gone to the academy, and you remembered that place. There was something about it that stayed with you, and so many people who have passed through there are struck by it, by something more than just a building. Describe what you...
I remember when we first moved there, the people used to say the birds, you know, sing sweeter or longer or whatever in Grand Coteau. I mean, it's, you know, I do think that there's a certain spirituality about the place, regardless of whether you're a religious person or not. Mm-hmm. There's a feel about the location. And I think being there is also a horticultural aspect of Grand Coteau that it sits astride the Coteau Ridge, which is like when the Mississippi River used to swing from northeast to west, this was the western boundary. So when it overflowed, the overflow would bring this certain soil down from like further north. So you get this special kind of soil. It's a very narrow band. It just extends maybe at the most a mile or two to either side of the ridge. And so it's a very fertile. Everything grows there remarkably well. In fact, it's a specific point, and I finally figured out when I planted it, but next to the kitchen shop in Grand Coteau, there's a ginkgo tree that I planted in 1982, and it's 30 years old, and it is truly remarkable. I mean, it's just huge, because we had a ginkgo tree that was over in the West Feliciana where we were living, which was probably 30 years old when we got there, but it was not even nearly this large. So things really grow well there. It's something about it. It's very verdant. I mean, it has that... And that's a dimension that's sort of mysterious and underlays the whole town, you know?
I'm so glad you said that, because as I was looking through the book this afternoon again, that's what kept striking me. Not so much the buildings, but the plants, the landscape, the trees, the greenery, just what you're mentioning
well,
right there.
Well, I'll tell you a story. There's a nursery there in town, the Barry's Wholesale Nursery. And I had a fellow that used to come in the kitchen shop when we owned that. He had a landscaper, nursery guy from Shreveport. And he told me, he said, well, I came down here to buy some trees for them. And I went in the nursery and I said, I want this and that. And they said, well, how old are these things? And they would tell him, and he said, he would just be flabbergasted. He said, he just couldn't believe that they were that young. They were so big and strong and vibrant. So, you know, it comes from an actual... you know, professional, I get this advice as well as my own observation.
Right, and which you've clearly been observing ever since the beginning. And again, I want to tell people who just might be tuning in, we're talking about photographer John Slaughter's book called Grand Coteau, just published by the UL Lafayette Press, a chronological story, a very personal story of his time living in Grand Coteau over 35 years. You mentioned the ginkgo tree. What also comes to my mind is that persimmon tree right next to it. And if one has no other reason to go to Grand Coteau but to see that ginkgo tree and that persimmon tree, they are enormous and they are so beautiful and healthy. I've never seen trees like that.
Well, you know, when we built the store, the dress shop next door, they had to scrape all the dirt off. And so I had them take it over to my house. And when they finished the building, I had them bring it all the way back.
You brought their soil back.
I brought the soil back.
Well, it was perfect soil for them.
Well, I just didn't want to lose it. And that's where it belonged. Yeah. So I had it brought back to put back in place.
Well, no, don't encourage people to go and scrape soil off of there. But, you know, that's, and tell people what Grankato means. Not everyone listening may know what that means.
Well, I think technically it means like large hill in the French. But it become a more of an idiom in our area for ridge.
Right.
Being that the hill is actually the ridge, which is formed by the overflow of the Mississippi River, like a natural levee.
Mm-hmm.
And as I described in the introduction or preface or whatever it is, you can see this, especially when you drive north towards Opelousas right before Doctor's Hospital. You can look to the right, and there's this big drop-off. Well, that, you know, and that ridge kind of goes all the way down further south and kind of reduces itself but meanders on down. But, you know, when I remember every once in a while with snow in Grankato, we would go to the villa, which is a location that most people don't know about, and so sort of like deep in the Jesuit property, but there's a fairly steep spot there where the ridge really is steep, and when we go back there and go sledding. So,
not something you would associate with Grankato or Louisiana.
Well, just, I mean, it is, it can be a pretty precipitous drop in some areas, but it tends to peter out as you go further south. Mm. But, And you're not aware of it necessarily when you drive from Grankato to Arnaville, because that area has been eroded because of the watershed has deteriorated that area. But if you go slightly north of there, it gets real abrupt. And that's the ridge, the Coteau Ridge or Grankato.
And so all of that lovely soil that the Mississippi would wash up just got deposited
that's exactly
in that ridge.
And, you know, and the reason I know this is because one of the areas I was living in, which is in the book with the cat on the porch, a guy came up one day and wandering around the fields, and I said, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm doing soil samples." And I said, "Oh, really?" And he said, and he pulled out this map that showed all the soil samples for the parish. And I said, "Well, I'd like to have one of those." So he gave it to me. And on that map, you can actually see that particular band of soil, Memphis Lois Association, it's called.
I've never heard of that. I mean, I knew that it was a ridge, and I knew that there were some nice plants there, but that I didn't know scientifically that the soil was beautiful there.
And actually, there was a ridge of trees. Unfortunately, it was cut, but there was a ridge not too far along that ridge, west and north of Sacred Heart, where there was a large grove of hickory trees, which is not something you normally would find in Louisiana, but we always thought that what happened is that at some point it washed down and overflowed and had these hickory nuts in the overflow, and they took root, and there's this fabulous stand of hickory trees, which unfortunately was cut, but it was remarkable. It was just not something you expected to find there. And I have a beech tree in my yard, which my neighbor, Emma says, is not supposed to be growing there, but it does.
Well, you know, you mentioned those trees are no longer there. One of the great things about your book is that documentation of things that have changed over time in Grankato as well. And I know so many of us are so glad that you were there, that you weren't just coming in and taking a couple of nice historical shots, that you were there in the life of the town over those many years, shooting the beautiful plants, some of the trees not there anymore. How did you... I can't imagine that you were systematically photographing Grankato. What drew your eye? When you first moved there, what did you find yourself taking pictures of?
I really don't have an answer for that. Just things that appeal to me.
Well,
I mean, I probably could have done a better job in some respects if I'd been more diligent with the idea of doing something, but I think then the art of it would have probably been lost. You know, I think just having the feel for it. And there are certain things that were planned, and there are certain things that were unplanned. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were certain shots in the book that I knew and waited and prepared for, and then there were others that were not so.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really had a specific goal in mind. In the beginning, there's several pictures that I took while I worked for the Daily World. I only worked for them like for 9 months, but it was always really an easy... If you needed a feature shot for the day's paper, it was pretty easy to drive around Grand Coteau just because of the place and find something that would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and several times I noticed in the descriptions of the pictures, you took it right outside your backyard or right on your front porch.
And I think that's a real important thing to mention because it's amazing. And it occurs to me every once in a while still today, I think, gosh, I just passed up a picture or a picture just went by me. And you get kind of wrapped up in the everyday thing and you kind of forget. That is one of the things you have to kind of train yourself to step back and go, that's a photograph. I need to shoot that.
And, you know? And I know that many of our listeners who have been to Grand Coteau will recognize many of the scenes. Many of your photographs are already iconic photographs of Grand Coteau. The photograph on the cover, the photograph that you end the book with, that absolutely beautiful black and white photograph of the man walking down the alley, the Oak Alley.
Well, some of the greatest hits, we're going to say. I mean, there was a few I roped in there. They're not necessarily in town. I just felt belong. They're in close proximity, but they're not specifically within the limits of Grand Coteau. But
well, it's like
they had the right feel, and there's a definite concern that the book has a certain feel that I was trying to get.
Right. It's like seeing those topographical maps, you know, where the ridges extend further out, and it really is a part of it. It's part of that spiritual topography.
Well, you know, the Evangeline May Bread picture, it's interesting. People will always say to me, I remember that, but where exactly is it? And I said, well, it's really hardly existent anymore, but this is where it is, right on the outskirts of town on Highway 182, north of Dead Man's Curve.
But it exists forever. When I see that picture in this book, I am there. I am right at that curve seeing that. It's you have saved all of those images and those moments for us, people who love Grand Coteau, people who have even passed through there just one time. Let's talk about the layers of pictures that you take, because it's a very complex, very personal book about Grand Coteau. Again, because you're so privileged to live there, be in the neighborhoods. Describe the range of pictures that you chose. Because once you got the idea to have this book published, you began going back through decades.
I chose the best pictures.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I mean, it wasn't really a program. I just went to the archives, and when I felt the picture, there are a few in there that may have been included for certain other reasons in addition to them, but I would say 95% of them were specifically in there because they just spoke to me. When we got towards the end, we were getting down to the final thing, I had some that I was concerned about, so I brought in James Wilson with UL Press to look at a number of them to kind of give me a feel for which ones we could add, and he picked out several in addition, the ones that I didn't really know. You know, I needed an outside person, but I would say 85% of them I'd already identified and felt these were the ones. And I think that's really critical in it's very critical from my way of thinking that photographers need to edit. They need to be very conscientious of what they're doing in terms of editing phase. So, and there were people that I didn't have in the book that I would like to have in the book, but I didn't have a good picture of them, so they were not there. I mean, that's just the way it worked.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One of the things that I like so much is that no matter how many times you've been to Grand Coteau, just visiting Grand Coteau, there are layers of people there that you don't encounter, people who are so integral to the workings of the Academy of the Sacred Heart, workings of the Jesuit Novitiate and Spirituality Center, people whose families have been there for generations and who have interacted with those educational institutions and the church in ways that many of us never get to see.
Well, it was important to us when we pitched the book that I said we were going to include local people, because I think they, in some ways, they feel that people come and go and come and go in Grand Coteau, and they're not, because they don't really interact with these folks, they're somewhat nameless in a sense. And I really felt that was important because they are the people who live there, and they are, and I think they have an appreciation for the town, even though sometimes there have been issues about things that I would like to have things work a little differently, but I think there's a general consensus that it is special and they appreciate it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I know this is just kind of an aside, but I know that Patrice Melnick, who helped you with the writing in this book, is she has a series on oral histories of Grand Coteau. And that's a beautiful, I guess, kind of addendum to what you all pictured, what you chose in this book, that her having these people tell their stories, and they're being collected, I think, and stored at the Center for Louisiana Studies. And it's a really nice addition to the photographs that you collected here.
Well, she truly has a very personal interest in people's stories. I mean, she thrives on this. And when I approached her, I think in the beginning, she didn't really know that I had a catalog of pictures of the people. And she was, I think, a little surprised and happy that there were a number of portraits in the book. And I think she got a real thrill out of doing the research and finding out about these folks, because many of the people in the book are deceased. And so It required her to interview relatives and friends. And I think she really enjoyed it. And it kind of went along with the program that she's been doing for quite a while, the open mic series and the things that she's been carrying on anyway with Casa Azul, the events that primarily take place on Thursday night.
Yeah, well, it was a lovely collaboration to invite her in there. Again, we're talking with photographer John Slaughter, whose book Grand Coteau has just been published by the UL Lafayette Press. It's available now through the press, or you can visit with him. There are several book signings coming up.
GrandCoteauBook.com.
And that there's lots of images there at that website.
Yes.
Okay, and that's your site.
Yes.
So if you'd like to take a peek into the book, you can go to GrandCoteauBook.com and see it, and then I think purchase it through the UL Press if you like.
Correct.
The next book signing that's happening is on the 4th of December. It's a UL Press book sale, and I think a number of the authors will be there.
Actually, I don't think it's the 4th, is it?
There's one at the Alumni Center on the 4th.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I'll be at that one. I'm not familiar with that. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, there will be books there. I know there will be, and a lot of from a number of people from the Center for Louisiana Studies and the UL Press, and then a book signing at Barnes & Noble, where you'll be there on December 8th, and that will be from 11 until 1 o'clock.
Correct.
At Barnes & Noble.
I'll be at Sacred Heart this weekend for Christmas at Coteau. And on Saturday, that afternoon from 4 to 4:45, I will be in Arnaville as part of the fire and water thing at the coffee. I forget the name of the place. I'm not familiar with it, but I'll be there on Saturday, this coming Saturday in the afternoon. So, but I will be at Christmas Coteau on Friday and Saturday with signing books there. And I'll also be at the kitchen shop in December. I'll be there on Saturday, not the 15th, but the Saturday following that, I'll be in the kitchen shop signing books.
So a lot more opportunities to visit with you and talk with you about the book.
And I'll look into that.
Share memories.
I wasn't informed about that, but I'll find out about the UL Press program.
All right, so this weekend you do have an opportunity in Grand Coteau, if you're able to get there, it'll be a nice opportunity to see the grounds and acquire a book and visit with John. I want to go back to, again, talking about the fertility of that area, because that really struck me, because I know many of the buildings very well, but your shots, I guess at different seasons, you have some shots of the snow. They make the town seem very fertile. It's as though you enhance that quality that is already there. Just talk about your photography and your style of photography.
Well, I grew up on a farm. Mm-hmm. Well, not a farm. I'm saying we had a place south of Baton Rouge. We had cattle and so forth. That's not what we did primarily. My father didn't do that as a living, but he had grown up on a farm, and this is the kind of thing he liked to have. So he had a big garden, and we had like 40 head of cows. And he was also a very avid plant collector. He was very involved with Emory Smith, whose place on the Holland Road is well known to people. And as a kid, we would go out and, I would have to go, but my dad would go out in the woods and collect plants, dig up plants, and so I would go with him, and I got a real education in plants. So I think what happens is I become very aware of that sort of thing. I've planted a lot of trees myself over the years. You know, we were talking about the ginkgo tree and the persimmon tree, and the persimmon tree is actually a graft that my dad did for me quite late in his life. And it's interesting because he was having a lot of trouble. He was quite old, and he said he had tried twice, and because you have to graft the oriental to the native to make it work. And he said, well, he wanted his third try. He said, if I don't get it this time, it's not going to happen. And but it did take, and I took that tree and moved to Grand Coteau and planted it. And a lot of people think it's the world's greatest persimmon tree. It's huge, and they love the persimmons. But I have a conscience about plants from growing up like that. So I would assume that starts to get reflected in the book. And there's actually a series of photographs that are not in the book of plants that I've taken over the years. And there's really no rhyme or reason to it. I really like... I have a whole collection of photos. A lot of people call them sago palms. They're actually not a palm tree. They're actually closer to pine trees, but they're very popular now for plantings and so forth. Mm-hmm. But there's like over 300 species of that particular plant. They're a very ancient plant. And down in the Yucatan, I took a picture of one that's like 15 feet tall, you know, in there. But the ones that we grow on here, I think, came from Japan originally, and they're very cold hardy. But I have a collection of photographs of just that particular plant because I like it so much. It's, especially in the spring when it's coming up, it's sort of this primeval force. It's sort of amazing.
But we're going to look for that book, John Slaughter Sago. Be all Sago.
It's funny, but you do these things and you don't really know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But you never know. Maybe one of these days I could do not a very extensive, but some kind of plant book. I'd love to do that.
Yeah. Well, I am so moved by the pictures here with the foregrounding of plants, because it's almost as if they are as important as the historical structures in Grand Coteau. When you're taking pictures of the church or you're taking pictures of some of these older homes, the verdant quality of the plants, and they seem very much alive, as much a part of the town as the people and the buildings.
Well, they live longer than people, that's one for sure. And also, and when they put the town in the National Register, they actually made note of the alleys and so forth as being part of the program. So that was they considered that so important in conjunction with the building. So it's and we've been fortunate. I mean, there's a picture of John Tate in the book, who was the caretaker for the gardens and the landscape at St. Charles College. He was a very avid plant guy. In fact, I remember I went over one day because he had his little nursery of his own, nursery for the college, and I need some oak trees, and I went over there. I bought three oak trees from him, you know, and, you know, he didn't want to sell me a lot of them because he needed them to plant all around the college, you know. And so there's an ongoing consideration, I think, among people to keep doing that, you know. A few years ago, we had some money left over from the Grand Coteau Preservation Association, which existed in the early 80s, and I went and I bought, 20, I can't remember. I think it was 20 oak trees up in Forest Hill, and I brought them down, and I went to people, and I said, look, I'll plant these for nothing. You don't have to pay a thing. I just want to put this in your yard. So I planted, like, when you go in Grand Coteau now, there's like four on the right, I think, when you drive in, and there's ones right across from the Chevron station and on two sides. And not everybody would take them because some people know there's going to be an issue later on, but, you know, they got to trim them and all that kind of stuff. But I did, I think I lost one, and I gave away one to someone else, but I think I planted 18 oak trees in town. Not on my property, on other people's property. Mm-hmm. And I really like trees, what can I say?
Well, you're following in that grand tradition of those priests and other people in Grand Coteau who felt the same way and planted all of those alleyways.
I really love the comment, as kind of well-known nurseryman, Nico, the Louisiana nursery, and I think he's passed away, but and he had this little brochure he's really famous for his daylilies. And one of the little blurbs in there, he said, it's the best time to plant a tree is a long, long time ago.
So start now. So a long, long time from now. Well, Grand Coteau has trees, many of them that were planted a long, long time ago. Tell us about the alleyways. And for those people, maybe, I guess, I love the place so much. I feel anything that encourages people to see the beauty of it is a good thing. Tell us about all the different alleyways and tree stands that you photographed in the book. Some of your favorite
Well,
places.
Certainly the most well-known is directly across from Sacred Heart. The graduation and mm-hmm. underneath them. And
you have a beautiful shot
I'm
of
sure
that,
you're,
yes.
I'm sure mm-hmm. yours truly here probably was there at one time. And these trees are, when these oak trees get to a certain age, they really have to be maintained because, mm-hmm. it takes a good bit of work. Actually, there are a few alleys in Grand Coteau that people rarely ever see. There's mm-hmm. one on the east side of the college, and I'm not even sure why it was planted there, but it's a remarkable grove that hardly anybody ever sees. People are really familiar with the yellow barn, sort of an icon. Well, behind that barn in a location which hardly anybody ever sees is a fabulous alley of oak trees. So I'm giving you a little secret about Grand Coteau that most people would never know about. Mm-hmm. Sort of like the secret of the patio of the retreat house, which I predicted would be the one photo in the book that most people would go like, where is that? And you can go and visit that on Monday and Tuesday when their retreats are not in progress. You can drive up to the retreat house. It'd be polite. You might want to knock on the office, but you can walk into that patio and get an idea of how beautiful it is. If you feel like you've been transported to South America or Central America. It's a fabulous place. But as I say, Monday and Tuesday are the days to do that because frequently on the other days of the week, they may have a retreat in progress.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing about this book is that you've taken us into some of those secret places that even someone who went to school there in Grand Coteau may never have seen.
Well, yes, and like one of those I would say is the bell in the church, which
is
a photograph that I really was very pleased to get because most of these pictures I already had, but I needed to fill out some stuff, so I took quite a few in the last year. And one of those was I had a photograph of the bell, but I was not happy with it, so I made an effort to go back up in the tower and retake it. And that is something that you're just normally just not going to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
It's a fabulous view up there, even though I felt a little, as I explained in the book in the photographer's notes, it was a little... I normally don't get vertigo or anything, but because it's where I was taking the picture, it's open on all four sides. It was a little eerie. It was felt a little bit uncomfortable because I had to back right up to the edge to take this picture. And it's like you're normally not in a place that's open on all four sides.
And the bell is so large.
And the bell is very large, yes.
What, and he's talking about the church, St. Charles Borromeo,
yes.
which is a very unusual church. It has an amazing bell tower, very rare even in the United States.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And the bell, I never realized, has a name.
Eleanor. Yeah, that's named after...
Mrs. Millard, the doctor's wife, named it after her favorite niece. I never knew that huge, beautiful bell was named.
I'll tell you one thing about it is when you... They didn't have cranes back then, okay, to lift the bell in place.
And that would have been in the 1900s, 1890?
Yeah, 1885 mm-hmm. or something like that. Church was built in 1879, and the belfry was added later. So when you go up in the belfry, they had to take the bell up through the middle of it. So they had these doors, these trap doors that you can see where they had to open the doors. And they built a space in the middle to haul it up to the top. And you can still see the doors where they did this. So when they finished doing that, they closed them up. And you can see that, and you go, wow, they didn't have a crane to put this in place, did they?
Well, again, those secret places, beautiful places in Grand Coteau. If you're tuning in right now, my guest is photographer John Slaughter. And I keep saying photographer John, but you're an artist on so many levels. And I know people who have seen your work, whether with wood or plants, or know that as well.
That's very sweet.
This is your photography book, Grand Coteau, published by the UL Lafayette Press. It's taken over 35 years from 1977 until the present. John and his wife and family have been living there ever since 1977. Again, the privilege of living there, where so many of us just visit or go to school or get to go to a retreat there. And here you've taken us into so many of those beautiful, lovely secret places, kind of like one of my favorite books, The Secret Garden. You suddenly get to enter into it when you see these photographs and meet people who are part of the fabric of Grand Coteau that really for years have made it all happen behind the scenes, whether you go to a retreat there. So let's talk about some of the buildings that people can see in here. I've waxed over the plants and the people, but we've mentioned St. Charles Borromeo, absolutely beautiful historical church. There's the Academy of the Sacred Heart, which you mentioned probably goes back to 1821. And then the St. Charles College, you have a number of shots there. Very unusual building also.
The college is kind of like this engineering transitional building. It's strangely enough, it's actually built on piers. You would never imagine this. I mean, it has an exterior wall that goes all the way to a base in the ground, but there's actually, you can go in the basement and you can see these pads, like a pier that you would see on a house, but these pads are like 6 feet across, and they support the columns that run all the way up through the third floor, one column stacked on another on each floor, and so it sort of has this, it's sort of like this mix of it's an architectural hybrid of construction, and they currently are finishing up the a huge renovation of the east wing where the Jesuit assisted living for Jesuits is going to be. And they've done a beautiful job. And I'm told that it's the only building that the Jesuits actually own, you know. And so I was always concerned that they would abandon this property because, and it's costly to maintain, and there have been times there when traffic has been slim, but now really there's going to be a permanent program for retired Jesuits, so I would say the future for St. Charles College is quite preserved.
Well, and preserved in so many gorgeous photographs. Again, Grand Coteau, John Slaughter, UL Lafayette Press.
Thank you, Judith.
You can, I'm overcome with emotion about the book, John. You can find out more about it either at grandcoteaubook.com or ulpress.org. And there are photographs at grandcoteaubook.com and lots of information about book signings at that site. If maybe you can just list the book signings again, John, where you'll be starting this weekend.
This weekend is Christmas at Coteau, and I will be there on Friday and Saturday, and then when it ends at 3 o'clock on Saturday, at which time I will go to Arnoville and be, I think, at the Coffee Drop, I think it may be called. I've never been there, so I'm not sure the exact name, but I'll be there from 4 to 4:45, and then the following Saturday, the 8th, I'll be at Barnes & Noble in Lafayette. I think I'm going to be there. You may want to call them. I think I'm scheduled to be there from 11 to 1. And then the following Saturday, I will be in Baton Rouge at the Barnes & Noble there. I'll also be at Pieces of Eight signing books during Festival of Lights. Is that what it's called, the Festival of Lights? Mm-hmm. I'll be there at Pieces of Eight signing books. And then I will be in the latter part of December, I will be at the Kitchen Shop on Saturdays at certain times, signing books as well.
All right, lots of opportunities.
I'll just tell you a real quick thing there, that when you haven't, we don't write a lot these days. We're always using our computers so much, so I've had to practice my penmanship.
Well, we'll look forward to your signing. John, thank you so much for coming by. We're going to end this just a little bit. But again, that's grandcoteaubook.com or ulpress.org. John Slaughter, his book, Grand Coteau.
Thank you so much. All right.